97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is Wellness One, brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health, your home for common sense, science-based healthcare. Here's your host, Dr. TJ Williams.
And welcome to the show, everyone. I am your host, Dr. TJ. With me, as always, is Aaron.
Hi.
Kind of paying attention over there in the corner. On today's episode, we have a very special guest. We have with us Nick Bodie. He is a nurse practitioner in our office, takes care of a lot of people, does lots of things in our clinic, basically all-around genius. He is a functional medicine certified nurse practitioner through the Institute for Functional Medicine. So welcome, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you for that glorious introduction.
It's very well deserved, very well deserved. Today on the show, we are going to talk about heart disease. This is a topic that I think, you know, we talk a lot on the show about thyroid health. And I think that heart disease is just as pervasive, if not more. It's the number one killer in America. More and more people have cardiovascular issues than you can even comprehend for most of us. There will be around 590,000 heart attacks that happen this year. Over half of them will be first-time heart attacks, and right about half of them, the very first sign or symptom of that heart attack will be that person having the heart attack dying. It's a very sobering statistic, but it's very true. Most people do not survive half the people do not survive their very first heart attack. And once you have one heart attack, you are at much higher risk of having a second, third, fourth, and eventually dying and succumbing to heart disease. Heart disease is a complicating factor for people that are dealing with diabetes. A lot of people that have type 2 diabetes actually end up dying from heart disease. It's listed as a cause of death for them, with a comorbidity being diabetes. So this is a topic that is very, it affects all of us. I mean, half of us are going to die from heart disease. Look in the car. If you're driving in the car, look around in the car. If there's more than just you in there, if you've got four people in there, two of you are going down with heart disease. That's just the raw statistics of it. It's a little sobering to hear. I completely understand, but it's important. And I know for me, heart disease is one of the things that I started with when I got into functional medicine. I decided when I started doing this type of work, what population can I help the most, or what things can I work to help people with that's going to bring me the most people? And I chose heart disease and diabetes, and that's basically how my functional medicine clinic, how the Institute of Natural Health started. I started putting it out there that, hey, if you've got heart disease or high blood pressure, or you know, narrowing of the arteries, or have had a stroke, or you have diabetes, come see me. We need to talk. There's things that can be done to help. That's how I've done it.
Go ahead. As you quickly learn when you get into functional medicine, that all of the parts of the body, all of the body's systems are so intimately connected. So you wind up starting out with cardiovascular disease and diabetes, and then you quickly realize hormones play a factor, and you know, diet definitely, the immune system, lymphatic flow, your oral health, so you know, flossing and brushing your teeth, and
the strength of your pinky toenail.
Yeah, exactly.
You laugh, but it's actually true, because those toenails, they're telling us about peripheral vascular flow and the peripheral artery health. It's you may laugh out there, but it's so true.
Absolutely. And one of the things we'll discuss later on in the show is we can actually measure some of these parameters with a very quick, simple, FDA-cleared,
non-invasive
device done in the office that gives us a lot of great information on how healthy your vascular system and your heart is.
Yeah, so that's something to look forward to for sure in today's episode. But I want to start by just talking about who has heart disease. and just kind of in generalities, a lot of people that come to see me, and Nick, I'll let you chime in here too. A lot of people that come to see me, they are to the clinic and they just happen to get me, or they've requested me for whatever reason. We start talking about their health history. We figure out what all information we need to gather. We get into our investigation mode and we identify, okay, we're going to do some blood work. And today I'm just going to talk about labs, you know, for the most part. We'll throw in some other stuff maybe in later on in the show. But we get this information back, and a lot of people come in and they're like, yeah, I know I have a low functioning thyroid, my stomach doesn't work right, or I have digestive upset, and you know, I've been told I've got, you know, high cholesterol, maybe they've been told that, or maybe they've been told they have high blood pressure, whatever. And invariably, cardiovascular disease is not the concern that they're coming in for. We run the test and we get their lab work back, and we actually figure out that the vast majority of their problems can actually be explained by the fact that they have raging cardiovascular disease going on. And then I get the pushback of, well, but my cholesterol is normal.
Yep.
Yep, that's true. Yeah. But the thing is, I start talking then about what cardiovascular disease is. And I draw this on the board to explain a lot of this. And I'm going to try to talk through this. And sometimes, you know, picture's worth a thousand words. And maybe we'll lose a little bit here with my explanation. But I tell people cardiovascular disease is the short term for that is heart disease. But very rarely is it actually ever the heart. And I remind people, look, the heart itself is just responding to things. It's not usually the problem. The heart becomes a problem when a blood vessel that supplies the heart with blood becomes blocked, and then the heart dies. That's a heart attack, right? The heart, the tissue of the heart, actually, the cells die. That's a heart attack. But the problem wasn't the heart. The problem was the blood vessels. So really, that's the issue. And when people have high levels of cholesterol, our body actually makes, our liver actually manufactures 80% of our body's cholesterol. And in some people argue that it's more than that. I stick with 80% because it's pretty well, research has shown it's about 80%. And so 80% of your cholesterol is actually made by your liver. So if you have high cholesterol, it's actually your liver that's the problem. It's not your heart. If your arteries are clogged, it's a blood vessel problem, not a heart problem. If you have high blood pressure is actually regulated by thyroid hormone and of the glomerulus, which is a part of the kidney, and regulating, figuring out how much pressure you have, and then this whole hormone cascade of the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system that all gets converted into, but yeah, it's a bunch of medical jargon to say that the kidneys are actually regulating your blood pressure. And so again, we have a quote heart disease that's actually not a heart problem. And we start looking at, okay, we're looking at liver, blood vessels, kidneys. We've automatically said, hey, you know what? This is a functional medicine problem. This is not a heart issue. This is a functional medicine problem. And when we start addressing the things that cause liver dysfunction, when we start addressing the things that are causing our kidneys to be an issue, when we start addressing the things that cause our blood vessels to become inflamed and have problems with our blood vessels, we're fixing the vast majority of, and we're addressing the vast majority of heart disease.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we know from some very large scale studies that have been done, Framingham Heart Study and the Accord studies. These studies looked at specifically cholesterol, and what they found was that just lowering cholesterol did not have any significant effect on lowering the risk of cardiovascular disease. It wasn't until they addressed inflammation that they actually lowered the risk of cardiovascular disease.
Did I not throw in there that those 587 or 857 to 887, depending on who you read, new or 500 and some thousand heart attacks that are going to happen this year, half of all the people that are going to have a heart attack this year, their cholesterol levels are normal?
No, you did not mention that, but that is a very good point.
I forgot to mention that point. That's a critical, critical point. So we've got 600,000 heart attacks happening this year, and half of those people that have them are going to have normal cholesterol levels. Let that sink in for a second. These people they have normal cholesterol levels. So what is it that's causing this heart attack? Could it be the inflammation that Nick just mentioned and the blood vessel problems and the liver having an issue? Like, what are we, like, are we addressing cardiovascular disease improperly in this country? Some would say maybe. Yes. Some would say yes. I'm just, don't shoot me. I'm just the messenger. I'm just telling you.
And I know you mention all the time, I hear you mentioning it, that, you know, it's cholesterol. A lot of people get this negative connotation with cholesterol, but it's actually the body's main antioxidant that it makes, right?
It is the premier in our body antioxidant system that we have. Think of it as like the way we put out a fire. So if we have high levels of cholesterol, that means that we're trying to fix something. Our body's inborn innate system is saying, hey, we're trying to fix something here, and you know, we're inflamed. We need to try to put this fire out, because the body can't heal when we have inflammation. We talked about this on our episode, I believe it was episode 120, where we talk about bioidentical hormone replacement. We talk in there about how adequate levels of testosterone drive down inflammation. We talk about it in there. Go back and listen to that episode. Here we're telling you that when you have this inflammatory fire going on in your body, you are naturally going to increase production of cholesterol. So rather than just say, oh, your cholesterol's high, let's give you something to lower your level of cholesterol, why don't we actually figure out what's inflaming the body, remove the source of the fire, and let the body's production of cholesterol normalize to where it should be on its own?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as we know that, again, just addressing cholesterol isn't going to significantly reduce cardiovascular disease risk, but you also come at a very dangerous risk when you lower cholesterol too much, right? I mean, your neurotransmitters, your sex hormones, testosterone, all that's made from cholesterol.
For sure. And when it's too low, it's a bigger problem. And I always tell people when their cholesterol is too low, I'm like, actually, low cholesterol is way worse than having high cholesterol, because if your cholesterol is super high, it's really not that difficult to get it to come back down. It is a problem if we need to raise your cholesterol.
Yep, that's much harder.
It's much, much harder to do. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about heart disease and a functional approach to cardiovascular issues. You're listening to Wellness One. And welcome back to the show, everyone. If you're just tuning in today, we are talking about heart disease and a functional medicine approach to heart disease. We are also joined by Nick Bodie, nurse practitioner at the Institute of Natural Health, in here talking about heart disease. And right before the break, we were talking about testosterone and how testosterone can decrease inflammation and decrease insulin resistance. And I just wanted Nick to be able to finish off his thought regarding how having adequate levels of testosterone can help both of those, and basically the vicious circle that goes with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that you know, lower levels of testosterone actually can increase inflammation and insulin risk for insulin resistance, which both have a negative effect on risk factors for cardiovascular disease. We also know that from an April 2010 study published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism that evaluated sex hormones, specifically, you know, like testosterone, estrogen, and the like, and cardiovascular disease risk. And they concluded that low levels of androgen or testosterone levels actually increased the risk for cardiovascular disease in both men and women.
So I'd made a mention earlier, too, about the whole, you know, insulin resistance and how type 2 diabetics, which are insulin resistant, die from heart disease. Well, this fits that exact narrative. This is the exact same thing that we're talking about. Because it's a two-way street. Insulin resistance will cause you to have low testosterone. Low testosterone will cause you to have insulin resistance. This will also increase your inflammation. Mm-hmm. It will increase all of these problems that go with it. I mean, there's not a diabetic on the planet that has adequate levels of testosterone, period.
Yeah.
It can't happen. If their blood sugar is up, your testosterone is down. It has to be.
Yeah, or low levels of inflammation.
Or have low levels of there's not a diabetic that has low levels of inflammation. That's exactly right. And the same thing goes true with insert Women, you can insert polycystic ovarian syndrome, endometriosis, uterine fibroids. All of those have to do with these hormones being out of balance. Men, you can insert prostate issues. It just happens. And these things are all interconnected, and it's a big vicious circle. And this is why, you know, you've got to be looking at the body as a whole. We can't piece this thing out and talk about the body in independent silos. The thyroid does not operate independent of everything else. The heart does not operate independent of everything else. We are all interconnected. It's all going on in the same person. And this matters. And if you're not looking at it this way, you are doing yourself a disservice long term. Yep. You will be less healthy long term because your body can only do so much for so long, and then it's going to give up. So I just trying to point that out there as far as that goes. Then I want to shift gears just a second, because we talked in the very first segment, Nick, you mentioned the pulse analyzer and how cool this device is that we utilize at the clinic. I want you to just talk a little more about the pulse analyzer and what it measures and what it does.
Yeah, so it's a very exciting device that we have in the office that we use to evaluate things like cardiovascular disease risk, and we can measure how balanced the autonomic nervous system is. That's your stress response and things like that. But it's a very quick, you know, it takes 3 minutes, non-invasive, simple office procedure, and you wear a little device on the tip of your index finger. And it measures with a light the blood flow through the blood vessels of the finger, the timing of the blood flow and the heartbeats. And from that, we can extract different variables like heart rate variability, which can tell us how healthy the heart is, how healthy the blood vessels are. So the greater the heart rate variability, and by that I mean, you know, a lot of people think that if you measure your heart rate and it's at 60, that it's beating, you know, one beat every second on the second, but it actually doesn't quite work like that. It can be a fraction of a second, milliseconds, you know, off either before a second or after a second. And that's called variability. And the more variability there is in heartbeats from heartbeat to heartbeat, the healthier the heart is. If you look at a sedentary person that's just sitting at rest, and we all know that sitting for long periods is not great for your health. You know, so if someone's just sitting down, sitting at rest, the heart's just chugging along at the same beat, low variability. And, you know, you look at the opposite, if somebody's exercising, their heart rate's going from high to low to high to low, you know, it's all over the place. And that's great. We all know exercise is great for the heart. So that's how you can kind of distinguish between low heart rate variability and being poor health, high heart rate variability being great health. But we can also tell a little bit about how elastic or stretchy the blood vessels are, the arteries, you know, which can affect things from, you know, blood pressure to perfusion of other organs in your body, your brain, your liver, you know, kidneys, etc. So you want your blood vessels to be very pliable, very stretchy, right? You don't want a hard, you know, copper tubing in your system, right? You want a nice flexible hose or tube. So we can tell how you know, elastic your arteries are and things like that. And another thing that the device can also measure is the your stress response. So your autonomic nervous system, that's your fight or flight, which is, you know, run from a bear. That's your sympathetic nervous system. And then you have your peripheral nervous system, which is your rest and digest, we say.
Yeah. When you're looking at the balance between your sympathetic nervous system and your parasympathetic nervous system, like we can tell. I mean, you can tell if someone's stressed, or they're telling you they're stressed. Like, okay, we run that after we know that you're stressed. We can pretty much predict that you're going to have a very high sympathetic nervous system on this test, and your parasympathetic is going to be low. Well, when we don't know, because we'd run this when you come into the clinic as a new patient, you get this. This is a test that's done on everyone. We look at this result before we come and talk to you. I already know if you're stressed or not. I don't even have to ask you. I already know. And it also is going to tell me if we're talking about lots and lots of physical stress or lots and lots of mental stress. And it also tells me how well you can handle that stress.
Yeah.
Are you, or can you adapt to it? And that's a critical piece, because if your ability to handle that stress is low, we know that you're on the verge of some major health crises going on, because our body cannot operate in that constant fight or flight mode with our nervous system completely out of balance like that. Everything is being miscommunicated. Things will be made improperly. We will be burning through nutrients way faster than we would be if we were able to handle that stress.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the more important markers from the autonomic nervous system analysis that we get, is how well you can handle stress. As we know, you know, CEOs and, you know, physicians, doctors, surgeons, they're under a ton of stress,
police
right? Police officers,
firefighters,
teachers.
Yep.
Thank you, teachers out there. I have a 4-year-old, so I know how that I could not do what you do, and we love you. Keep up the good work. But yes, you're under a lot of stress, but if you can handle the stress well, then they won't negatively affect your health.
Right. We're talking about a different ballgame for those people. Yeah, it's just, it's very interesting, the information that we can gather from such a short test and such an easy thing to do right there in the office. We can gather so much information before we lay eyes on a person, before we talk to a person. Like, it's pretty impressive. And so that also, you know, helps us to know, like, okay, we need to really investigate what's causing, if someone's has poor stress resilience, we need to investigate, okay, why is it that we're having such a hard time handling this stress? What's the driver? What's causing this? Because it's ultimately, it will impact your cardiovascular system for sure. It will definitely cause problems. And so it's just a great piece of, equipment that we, you know, I love it.
Yeah,
I think it's great.
Yeah, and it, you know, stress goes hand in hand with cardiovascular disease, like you were saying, and we know this from Formula One racers. There's some of the top athletes in the world. Their bodies are very physically primed. Their diets are very well controlled, but they will actually have during and for several weeks after a race, very high levels of cholesterol in response to stress. Stress can, you know, affect your cholesterol, your particle sizes, all kinds of stuff.
Isn't that very interesting? And the same thing happens in athletes that are in competition all the time. It's universal for athletes. It's been measured in Formula One drivers, but that's just the population that they did the study on.
Yeah.
Pick an athlete. You could find anyone, and you're going to see similar things. And that's why athletes are very particular with what physicians they utilize. They've got to have people that understand the stresses that go on with athletes, mm-hmm. as opposed to your average ordinary people.
Yeah.
Right? Most people can't handle the stressors that these athletes undergo. So that's just one of those things that happens. So We're going to have to take a break here in a minute, but when we come back, I want to dive into some other cardiovascular health things. I want to talk a little bit more about different treatments for cardiovascular disease. What can be done once you identify that we actually have things going on? What are things that a person needs to look for, or that they could potentially do in order to help various things like arterial stiffness or you know, high levels of cholesterol, or you know, high levels of inflammation? What it can actually be done to help their bodies heal and repair and reverse, or potentially reverse, the damage that's happened or the cardiovascular disease that they're dealing with. So we'll talk about that when we come back after this break. And welcome to the show, everyone. If you're just tuning in today, we have been talking about heart disease, and we have special guest Nick Bode, nurse practitioner, functional medicine certified practitioner at the Institute of Natural Health, that's been in here talking about heart disease. And I want to shift gears a little bit from where we were talking about. I want to get into talking about different ways that we can go about treating this stuff. But before we get into the whole treating thing, I want to talk briefly. I say briefly. I don't know how brief will be. Yeah. Briefly about testing. So testing really matters when we're talking about cardiovascular disease, because we want to be testing not only our cholesterol levels, which is kind of a misnomer. Total cholesterol, you guys can go get your labs and look at it. Total cholesterol is not how much cholesterol you have. It's how heavy your cholesterol is in a volume of fluid. Total cholesterol, the units of measure for total cholesterol are milligrams per deciliter. That has no bearing on how many cholesterol particles you have or what size they are. Yeah. And that matters more than how much they weigh.
Or how sticky they are.
Yeah, or how sticky they are. Your total cholesterol of 200 just means that's how heavy it is. You could have one particle that weighs 200 milligrams, or you could have 200 particles that each weigh 1 milligram. That's what we're talking about here. It's not telling you how many, it's just telling you how heavy. When we get into lipoprotein fractionation, or like the actual particle sizes, that's what matters. That's using, you know, the unit of measure for that is nanomoles, which is how many of something is actually in there. Way more important piece of information than your total cholesterol is in general.
Yeah, and there's a reason too why on the advanced cardiovascular panels that we run, that inflammation levels are included, and another marker in the blood called LPPLA2 activity, which tells us if you have leaky plaque, which is very bad plaque. You know, the next step in leaky plaque is putting down a fibrin clot, and then if that clot were to fall off somehow, you know, it can cause a stroke or a heart attack.
That is correct. And we're looking at things like lipoprotein little a, which is 10 times stickier than LDL cholesterol. And this stuff is stuck to LDL cholesterol. So it's knowing what that is, we're looking at our omega-3 levels to find out what's going on there. And we even look at some genetic markers, things like apolipoprotein E, ApoE, yeah. Which that profile tells us, you know, how well your body can handle fat. So your levels of omegas may be, omega-3s may be really low, but your ApoE profile says that you shouldn't actually consume lots of fats, because your body can't really process that, and you're at increased risk of cardiovascular disease due to it. So
yeah, and this is where, you know, testing is so important before you start any kind of treatment, because as you mentioned, you know, you could be reading an article on how great omega-3s are for you, and then you go to Costco and buy a Costco-sized bottle of omega-3s and start taking them, but you're actually doing more harm for your body than good.
Mainly because that Costco stuff is probably rancid.
It's probably junk anyway. But
but that's neither here nor there. Yeah. We're just talking about consuming the animal fat.
Yeah. And, you know, there are many other tests as well, too, that are equally as important, even as far down as genetic testing at the genetic level, and checking things like catechol methyltransferase, or COMT, finding out if you have any SNPs in that, or some of you might be familiar with the MTHFR, the mother gene, can increase your risk for cardiovascular disease, and many other things as well too. But there are very specific treatment options for that, and also very important things to avoid in supplements and food as well.
Right. So again, having somebody that knows what in the world they're talking about when it comes to this matters, right? So if we talk about some of the treatment options and things that we can do, we can talk briefly about some oral supplements. We'll spare you the conversation about omegas. They're generally well accepted that they're beneficial for cardiovascular health. Yeah. But again, like Nick was saying, there are some things in advanced testing that could identify that they're not actually the best thing for you. So you got to figure that out for yourself. But some other things that are out there are things like vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin D3, K2, those are three of the ones that I like to use a lot. Do you have some others to add there, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge fan also of optimizing vitamin D3 and K2. We just don't get enough K2 in our standard American diet. You know, other countries that eat, you know, natto and miso and things like that, those contain vitamin K2, but when's the last time you had natto?
I don't know, but I could tell you the last time I had K2 was this morning when I took my D3 K2.
Yeah, so yeah, it's very important. Yeah, most of the time you just want to supplement with it. But also, you know, you can eat those healthy things too. But supplementation can be very helpful.
So vitamin K2, for those of you who may not be aware, what vitamin K2 does, it works in conjunction with vitamin D, but vitamin K2 tells the body where to put calcium. In the absence of vitamin K2, we will actually put calcium freely into our arteries, leading to atherosclerosis. With adequate levels of vitamin K2 in the body, we will actually tell our body to put calcium into bone, which is where calcium is supposed to go. So this is, vitamin K is extremely important for arterial health, but it's also important for bone health because it's what triggers and tells the body where to put the calcium. It just flat out says, hey, this is where it goes.
And this is why a lot of other cultures, Asian cultures, Eastern cultures, enjoy much lower risks of cardiovascular disease because they're incorporating that naturally into their diet.
Correct. That is correct. So that's a huge one. Vitamin E comes in, you know, most people think of vitamin E, what they're looking at is vitamin D alpha tocopherol, which is a very specific form of vitamin E, but vitamin E actually has 8 components to it. It has 4 tocopherols and 4 tocotrienols. I'll spare you the boring lecture on what those things all are. Just know that if you're taking a vitamin E supplement, you need to be taking a vitamin E that has all 8 pieces in that puzzle, because vitamin E is our fat-soluble antioxidant, extremely important for helping to keep inflammation down. Then we have vitamin C. Cardiovascular disease has been described by some as arterial scurvy, meaning our blood vessels don't get enough vitamin C. We as humans don't get enough vitamin C. Research has shown that we actually, this 100 milligram RDA is likely way too low. Some research actually suggests that we need about 2,500 milligrams every single day of our life. And if you don't know, that's the equivalent of about 25 oranges. And for most people, when was the last time you ate an orange, let alone 25 oranges a day for your whole life? Most people, we don't get that in our diet. We just don't get adequate levels of vitamin C. And if we have plenty of vitamin C, that helps us because we have this stuff inside of our blood vessels called the glycocalyx. And the glycocalyx, this may be the very first time you're ever hearing that, but you are going to be hearing more and more of that in the future. The glycocalyx is this slick, slippery substance that lines the inside of our blood vessels. And the health of the glycocalyx is actually determines the health of our cardiovascular system. And you know, really for a lot of vascular damage to happen, the glycocalyx has to be gone. And there are some of these nutrients that we're talking about really helps us to supply the glycocalyx and help our blood vessels remain slick and healthy like they're supposed to be. A guy that actually found the glycocalyx won a Nobel Prize for finding it. So it's pretty important that we have that. I know one of the things that Nick likes as well is green tea. He likes green tea so much that we actually keep it in our office. For anybody that's visiting, they can brew themselves a cup of green tea.
Absolutely.
There are lots of health benefits to green tea.
Yeah, there have been studies that show, you know, there was one study in particular that took 10,000 men, 10,000 women, and broke them up into how much green tea they drank every day. And what they found was the more green tea that they drank reduced, you know, at the 3 to 5 cup range per day, reduced their all-cause mortality, which means death from anything, by about 30%, and it reduced their cardiovascular disease risk factors by about 27%. And that's something, you know, super simple, easy. And green tea also has a ton of other health benefits, not just for cardiovascular, but for hormones and detox and the like.
And so, the fact that if you're drinking 3 to 5 cups of green tea, that is, 24 to, you know, whatever ounces extra of water that you're consuming that most of us are dehydrated and we could use that added water.
Yeah.
Last but not least is bergamot. Did we talk about bergamot? Did I just mention it or did you mention it? Did we talk about bergamot?
Maybe over the break we mentioned it, yeah.
Bergamot is a really cool little thing. It's a little citrus fruit.
Found in Earl Grey tea.
Found in Earl Grey tea, yes. Yeah. It's some really cool stuff. It has lots of benefits. Some of those benefits would include helping the body make cholesterol particles the proper size, because that's really important. The other thing that it does is it helps with arterial stiffness and elasticity. It helps our vessels become more elastic. So very beneficial there. So those are some of the supplements that we like as far as, you know, things for cardiovascular issues.
And you mentioned berberine earlier too, well, and that's one of my favorite as well. And the pharmaceutical companies just recently came out with the PCSK9 inhibitors, which was actually derived from a compound in berberine, which has been around for, you know, hundreds of years. And berberine works in three major ways. It helps the liver create more LDL receptor sites, effectively balancing the amount of cholesterol and LDLs particles and everything in your blood. And it also works on insulin resistance and blood sugar regulation, which we mentioned earlier increases risks for cardiovascular disease. And then a third way it works is by balancing the gut microbiome, which we won't get into on this episode, but maybe an idea for a future episode.
So we've got to take another break. When we come back, we are going to continue talking about different things that can be done to help with cardiovascular disease. We're actually even going to get into some IV nutrition things that have been beneficial that we use in our clinic. You're listening to Wellness One. And welcome back to the show, everyone. We have been talking today about cardiovascular disease. Yes, Erin is still here.
I'm here. Nothing to contribute. You guys have it covered.
Nick and I have got it covered, apparently.
She keeps us in line.
Yeah, she is. She's giving us lots of thoughts and ideas over break, and then she's like, you guys talk about that. So it's good things, but the last segment we were talking about oral supplements that can help with cardiovascular disease, some of the things that we like to utilize, you know, just specific for cardiovascular disease. In this last segment, we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to talk briefly about the benefits of IV nutrition. We do quite a bit of IV nutrition in our clinic. We help a lot of people with it. And I just kind of want to, Nick, I want to let you just kind of talk about benefits of IV vitamin C, why we use it, and how well it works.
Yeah, so I know I hear you mention all the time to your patients and on the radio that we can't trust the gut of a sick person, right? So we can't.
That's correct.
We can't trust that somebody that is coming to our clinic that is, you know, very ill, has a lot of gastrointestinal issues, a lot of GI issues, to absorb the vitamins in their food, but also supplements orally. So that brings us to IV nutrition, which we bypass the gut, and we're also able to administer much higher doses than we would be able to orally through IV. And you also get the side benefit of hydration, which you touched on earlier.
The hydration benefits are huge. Like we can check people for their levels of hydration. We have a very specific body composition an analysis device that we use in our office, and I don't think we've had I don't remember specifically a single patient who didn't show up as chronically dehydrated. It's just pervasive in this country that we are just dehydrated. We don't get enough fluid, and the IV nutrition just adds an extra layer of hydration and fluid to our system.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, just getting a 500cc bag, you know, just not a whole lot, is the equivalent of drinking about a gallon of water a day. So it, you know, can be very effective. You know, if you just take the water, I say water, but it's actually saline mixture. But just that aspect alone, you know, set the vitamins aside, and that can be beneficial just on its own. But you add in the vitamins and vitamin C and the B vitamins can help with cholesterol particle sizes, inflammation, detox, you know, many different things.
The inflammation component is huge. We are, as a society, we are chronically inflamed. Very rarely do we find someone who doesn't have levels of inflammation going on somewhere in their body. And when we can administer something that can help to eliminate that inflammation at a fairly rapid rate, that's when the body can heal. We cannot heal when we're inflamed. I use house examples with people all the time, and one of them I use is for inflammation. And I'm like, imagine your body is a house, and if you're inflamed, your house is on fire. Do you you don't do anything with that house that's on fire until you first put the fire out. You don't go in and repaint the walls while the house is on fire. You don't go in and replace anything while the house is on fire. You actually have to put the fire out, then you have to clean up the mess. Then once the mess is cleaned up, then you start rebuilding the house. That's the order that it has to happen. The order is the same in the human body. If you're coming to us and you have issues, cardiovascular issues, we already touched on the fact that you're inflamed. So we've got to figure out where the inflammation is, and we got to put that fire out first. And we utilize IV nutrition to do that at a fairly rapid rate.
Yeah, and for all of you out there who are wanting to lose weight and optimize weight, which, you know, if you are overweight, you know, can most likely increase your risk for cardiovascular issues.
That's
but,
right.
But being overweight can actually, you know, have higher levels of inflammation, and that inflammation can make it harder to lose weight. It actually creates what's called angry fat, and
angry fat.
and I know that's a, you know, harsh term there, but it's true. It makes, you know, inflammation makes the weight harder to lose. So if you're looking for a step in the right direction on where to go for weight loss, it might be addressing inflammation in the body.
That is a very valuable point. And like you said, a lot of people who are overweight are dealing with some sort of cardiovascular issue, whether they actually know it or not.
Yeah.
We touched on this earlier. A lot of people come to us, at least to me specifically, and they don't even realize that they have cardiovascular issues because they're young enough that they haven't been tested. Or B, their doctor has told them, oh no, everything's just fine, when in reality it's not, because they didn't look at the right things.
Yeah, and you can't feel high cholesterol, you can't feel sticky cholesterol like you can feel wound, or
you can't feel high blood pressure either.
Yeah, not always. I mean,
sometimes
unless it's really
can.
High,
yeah.
You know, headache and stuff. But
a lot of people can't. They have no idea when their body is making too much cholesterol.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just don't know, like, or too little cholesterol. Even worse, we touched on that.
Yeah, or we do find, you know, chronic low grade levels of inflammation, which, you know, you may not feel in the body. It may not show up as a joint ache or pain or, you know, things like that. And I commonly get people, you know, we check their inflammation levels and they're moderately elevated, which correlates with cardiovascular inflammation specifically. And you can't always feel that.
Right. Right. Because when your blood vessels are inflamed, you just don't know.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of like having a small fire in your house that you didn't know was there.
Yeah.
It's better off to know that it's there so you can address it.
Yeah.
Right. You want to know what's going on. Or it's like termites. You know, you don't know that you have termites in your house until someone comes out and investigates. Oh my gosh, you have termites. Yeah.
Or the whole house collapses.
Yeah. or you're right walking around and the whole house collapses. That's your first symptom of a heart attack.
Don't wait till your house falls in on you people.
That's exactly right. So we make light of it, but we make light of it because, you know, the system has just not been proactive in people's cardiovascular health. It's let's wait until there's a problem and then let's throw a medication at it and, you know, let that Band-Aid, you know, create side effects and not really truly get to the underlying health issues.
Yeah.
We're sitting here saying, look, we have very specific formulas, the IV formulas that can be employed to help you increase arterial wall stiffness or flexibility, decrease that stiffness, you know, help your body if you're laying down plaque to stop that process and let your body reverse that process.
Yeah.
These things can be done.
And lower blood
pressure,
you know, naturally as well too.
Lower blood pressure, get that inflammation out of the system. When you start taking away the things that trigger the problem, that's how we fix it. So anyway, that's about all the time we have for the show. If you want more information, please visit our website, inhstl.com. Shoot us an email, info@inhstl. Call us, 314-293-8123. We're happy to answer any questions. We love hearing for you. For Aaron and for Nick, I'm Dr. TJ. Thanks for listening.
Get more at 971talk.com.